All right, then I'll start things off with Tavi. So the start is to ask you a little bit about the background and sort of how you started Salve, and even before that, you know, you worked at Big Bang as far as I know, so going back to those days in Skype. So what you did before Salve, and then we can slowly maybe migrate into Salve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, thanks. Hey, I'm Tavi from Salve, CEO and the founder. Yeah, a bit about my background. I'm a mathematician. I like to calculate things and large data, big data, and this kind of stuff is like, in these days, one of the things that mathematicians can do, and that's why I ended up in Skype. Skype used to have a lot of data, a lot of calls, customers, transactions, but also a lot of fraud, credit card fraud. And originally I thought, come on, Skype is a cool company, but fraud is super boring, I don't go there. But luckily, Rina is not here, but this kind of smart people, Yuri Shamov, and they still managed to convince me that they should come there and use my mathematician skills to catch fraud around the credit card. And like, just to take a pause on this, like, it was like early, like in the middle of 2000s, when e-commerce was booming and Skype was the European coolest, like I think first unicorn in Europe or something. But also e-commerce-wise, like there was huge problem with credit card fraud, and like at some stage Skype was almost to go into bankruptcy because like we couldn't control fraud before I joined, of course. But it was like e-commerce and credit card was big thing. But now if you think back to today, like what kind of crime is happening today around us, like one very hot topic is authorized push movement fraud, or like scam, like love scam and investment scam, where older people are getting cheated. And these are like bank transactions. Like bank transactions used to be the most secure things ever 15 years ago. Now they are not anymore because there is a financial technology revolution happening. There are instant payments, there are APIs, there are like automation. So like history is repeating itself, I can tell you already from my experience. But yeah, that was like what I learned in Skype, how to fight crime with large data sets and how to fight crime across the global network. I spent a couple of years, like 7 years in Skype, which was like ages, throughout different ownerships like Silver Lake and Microsoft and eBay and all these cool companies. But actually this built a community, and like many, I think there are still some Skypers here, but actually like that was the first generation of the Estonian startup ecosystem. And from that, many other really, really world-changing companies have grown out. And I had luxury to join one of them, which was Wise or TransferWise back then. Christo Kerman had a problem that he had already 40 people in the team, and he had to take care for everything, including something around compliance and AML. And he was looking for someone to take it over from him. So I was invited by Trine Hertmann from Greenfin. Again, like she used to work. We used to work together in Skype. Again, this network is something that matters and repeats it over the time through the investments and through the companies. And
you led fraud on AML like at Wise for a while.
Yeah, Wise. Like although like when I joined, they didn't have a clue what is compliance or what is AML or what are these things.
Yeah.
I had to Google it, but somehow Christo believed that I can help him with that, and like that was actually one thing which I'm trying to keep in mind also when I'm building my own team now, is that it's not the best idea maybe to hire always the hardcore specialists of particular area. Sometimes it's good to get people who are not experts, and they need to innovate and figure out some hacky things, which I did in Wise. But luckily, if you're looking different cool scale-up fintechs around us, then many of them have got into trouble with AML, like Revolut and N26, and yep. There was this company called Wirecard, maybe someone remembers, like cool movie. So because these companies have failed culturally to meet regulatory expectations, or operationally they haven't been able to manage it. In Wise, somehow these problems haven't appeared.
What kind of hacky things did you do at Wise?
Actually, that's like, I built up the operational teams and products and compliance regime, but like one really important thing for me was that like in the fintech or like in regulated industries, this regulation is super boring, and like come on, like you don't want to follow all these rules which are like purely tick boxing and papers. But I realized that instead of thinking what's required officially by the laws from most of us here, actually think about like what's the meaning of the law, what is the aim of the law, why did guys in parliament or wherever they are wrote these laws. And actually I realized that, okay, the ultimate goal of the AML policies and procedures and all this crappy stuff is actually to save us, like our kids, like from drug trafficking on the streets, or like human trafficking between Africa and Europe, or like with the war in Ukraine, like people are making money and laundering it into UK. So like these kind of bad things are really happening because financial institutions are not able to stop it. So that's the ultimate reason why the regulations exist. And as laws, they are like, yeah, maybe not the most successful ones, but actually the ultimate idea of these things is still there. And that's that was like, as soon as I found out that, okay, what is the actual goal of these regulations, then I started to work backwards, like, okay, what I can do to meet the expectations, not the text. And again, it turned out to be pretty hacky ones, because when the auditors are coming in and they have the by the book checks and they want to see exact things that are written down, they don't think along with you. Like AI and machine learning, which was like still is cool topic, and I was applying different cool models to find the suspicious behavior of the customers. But actually for the regulators, like auditors, they didn't count, because like it was not written in the law that AML can be done with AI and stuff. So there was a huge conflict between the regulator expectations and also like versus what's actually useful in the crime fighting.
And then maybe transforming some of that wise insight into Salve, what led you to establish Salve? What was the sort of the insight that you gained that wise? In terms of the space in general and the product that you wanted to build? Mm-hmm.
I think there are two things. Like one is that I saw that how ineffective this industry is actually. I had to build in Wise, I had to build everything from scratch for myself, or like there were a huge amount of people, really smart engineers, really smart product people, operational gurus who were actually just, I wouldn't say wasting their time, but spending their time and the investors' money and customers' money to be compliant and to fight financial crime, because there was no good products out there available for us. And just if you multiply it, okay, in Wise and startup sector, we are reasonably effective. But when I saw and started to realize what's happening in the banking sector, there are thousands and thousands of people per bank working, doing some very, very dummy button clicking. I realized that how ineffective it is, and actually also like how little use it produces. Like there is like in the global like money laundering problem, it sounds like white collar crime, but actually, as I said, there is like people are getting killed, like animals are getting killed in Africa, forest is getting destroyed. And so it's about $4 trillion per year, which is like about the size of the German economy or like Japanese economy, which is getting laundered. And the worst is that only 1% of that is getting caught. So think about business process where your efficiency like 1%, like you're targeting to have 100%, that actually you're hitting 1%, and that's it, regardless of the huge cost that you're doing. And then it started to bother me that, come on, if this is the scale of the problem, and I know that I have resolved it for one company, maybe I can apply my knowledge also for some other companies. So again, thanks to old Skype network, some people from LHV Bank and some other fintechs started to ask me to help them just with my SQL data science like advisory, just to help one by one, like to get them into the better shape. And I was doing, and I saw that there is a demand in the market for this kind of help. And then I thought that, okay, if I can do it myself, I will hire some people to do it more. And then we thought, okay, let's build actually a proper product based on our knowledge. So like one like assumption for me that worked was that I was like pretty good expert in that field. I saw the need, which I could resolve manually. I think this Airbnb stuff like is an example that resolved the problem with the least effective way, and then figure out how to scale it up. And that's how it started for us.
Well, like looking back at the market at the time at Wise as well, in terms of the AML space, I'm sure it wasn't starting out. There were other companies, there were quite legacy ones as well. So. Mm-hmm. Both from what you guys are doing today at Salve and looking at that time and the space as well, what do you do that's different than what's existing on the market? Because I've read that you say, you know, you're focusing on crime and not a tick the box kind of compliance kind of a tool. So what do you mean by that? How do you differ from what used to be on the market when you guys launched?
Yeah, there's no clear answer because we keep learning and improving all the time. So, but originally, yeah, like we understood that it's beating financial crime is our mission. Like, actually, we want to stop criminals. And we realized that we cannot do it alone. We need people who are working in the fintechs and banks and other companies. We need to give them proper weapons or proper tools to fight the crime. So they're our partners in this crime fighting. And of course, these tools and processes have to be compliant. Like, regulatory needs are there. And if they're not, if they're super effective in the crime fighting, but not following the expected procedures, then they're still in trouble. So, but actually, the crime detection success is in the middle. What's different? Of course, like, if you think about companies like SAS or like Oracle or these kind of huge companies are producing different software for the enterprises and also for the like smaller companies. Then the software is there and they're well-known brands and they're trusted brands, but actually quality of this software isn't the best, if actually it's maybe the worst. And like many of you who are serving enterprise customers, I think you have seen that like in your niche also, like take the Pipedrive or whoever, like there are huge legacy providers out there, but always like when you dig into this, these legacy providers are usually not good at all. That so happened in our space as well. Like, the products which maybe used to be good in like 20 years ago when the bank transactions were super slow. The only way to like send money from one bank to other was actually a classical transaction. So when the technology was built back then and banks paid millions and millions and you got into this sector, then there is no reason to innovate for these old companies. And actually the fact that now we have the e-wallets and crypto companies and instant payments and PSD2 API connections and stuff like that, these legacy providers haven't built almost anything for that, and that's why like they're not sufficient anymore. So the time changes, and the most valuable thing I learned was that if you think about movies, James Bond or whoever, like criminals are working in the networks. They are like suppliers to each other. They have mapped out how the banks and the financial technology companies around us are working. And they are reselling to each other the knowledge about how to hack into this, or like not hack technical, but how to abuse these systems. But actually crime fighters, like people in the financial companies, they are working in silos. Like, they have their own data about their customers, transactions, which they are checking manually or automatically all the time. But they see only the silo, very small piece of the network which is around them. So it's like, I realized that mathematically, it's not possible to beat like financial or like networks or like exponentially growing networks when you're not building network yourself. So that's why we started to build another product which serves the same end goal.
This is the bridge yeah. Initiative, right?
Yeah, basically it's like connecting crime fighters with each other across the world. Of course, like we started from Estonia because it's a nice test market, and it took.
How does it work? Just like to go into a bit of the detail.
Well, it's ultimately it's like end-to-end encrypted messaging platform, like WhatsApp, but it's like WhatsApp for the banks, AML teams, which has to be. There are super heavy, complex regulatory needs, like GDPR-wise, like in when exactly you can exchange your customers' data. This is like super private data with each other, with from one bank to another bank. What are the technical security requirements, auditability requirements, contractual responsibilities, UI, like this is like devil is in the details, and it was super hard to figure out the details, but now it's there. It took, as a test market in Estonia, like it took maybe 6 months to win the 99% of the banking market here. Like, again, now all the banks are our customers, and we're going after the next countries in the same way, or same networks in the same way. So it's like virally growing networks, which is like dream, but it's happening in the banking sector, which is like, wow, that's it.
But the value proposition for them is obviously to, you know, if you are part of the network, you'll, you know, have a better, you know,
exactly
in terms of the AML space.
And again, like it's sort of super interesting learnings, like there are like always discussions how to sell and how to grow the business and like understanding different segments or who are the decision makers in different organizations and selling to bank, there are like what the CEOs of the banks appreciate, and they want to be innovators and they want to be ahead of the game and they want to reduce their corporate risks. If addressing to the specific crime fighting teams, then they have more operational needs and interest and effectiveness and so on. So like understanding and mapping out different interests and then pains of the people, this has been like super interesting exercise, because that's what I didn't get from Skype and I didn't get from Wise. It's like which were focused on consumers, which was like more about large numbers and like A/B testing and all of that, and then suddenly ending up in the enterprise, which is like way like different. Like need to fight a lot to win every single customer.
And how sort of going forward, how does that the general AML bridge initiative translate into other markets? How hard is it? What's your next target market? How hard is it to expand across, you know, different markets in Europe, mm-hmm. in the AML space, either due to regulations or general sort of B2B culture selling? What's the next market for you guys?
Well, Europe is the best market for us in general, because like due to the heavy regulations which are happening here, Europe is the worst place for the entrepreneurs, actually, for the financial technology entrepreneurs, because like the amount of regulations over here comparing to the rest of the world is enormous, which means that the institutions are spending the most in our region to be compliant and to meet the expectations. And for us, for RegTech providers, it's a great market, so we don't need to go too far. We are already working in London with some companies, in Sweden, mm-hmm. in Latvia, Lithuania, so it's spreading around. Another learning for me is like everyone is telling about right timing or good timing of your startup. Like you can have a best product, but if it's too early or too late, then you're in trouble. In our case, it seems pretty much that it is exactly the right time moment for us to do this collaborative crime fighting, to build the connectivity around the companies, because it's not what I'm saying, but it's also what regulators are saying, what European Commission just like they are coming up with a new laws, like not very frequently, but like if it touches AML, then it's like super heavy focus, and they are writing into the laws now that okay, this kind of data exchange that Salve is doing, they're not saying Salve, but this kind of data exchange that we're doing, that should be done everywhere in Europe. And these kind of signals or material evidence that okay, we are at the right time and the right place, it's just a question of like executing and doing it. So we're not driving the market, actually, like regulators are driving the market for us.
And across Europe, sort of then the next market is then from a regulators driven, driving kind of a perspective is UK for you guys, do you think?
Just to name, like actually there is like also as this data exchange, privacy data exchange is super sensitive topic, yeah. And there are some countries who are more acceptable, where people are like kind of fine with that, and there are some other countries where it's a complete no-go. And then in Europe also there are some countries who don't care too much about money laundering, they do the minimum. And some countries care a lot because they have had painful problems, like Estonia, Sweden, Denmark, Netherlands, UK, France, Germany. These are the countries where these two things match up pretty well, that it's they are somehow financial centers, or financial hubs, mm-hmm. there's like a lot of money. Again, Netherlands is a great example, right? Like trading and stuff going through them. They are quite open society. They understand that if there is need to stop crime, need to protect ourselves, then actually it's fine to share the information of the criminals, potential criminals, with each other. But there are other countries like Austria or like Malta and Cyprus who maybe don't care that much. So it's like mm-hmm. pretty easy to filter Lenient out the countries stories, and where the cultural and legal okay. like readiness is there and where not. So
maybe let's talk a little bit about numbers. So in terms of the size, team size, number of clients, revenues, where are you guys currently at?
Yeah.
Whatever you can share.
Numbers. Like I said, I'm a mathematician, so I don't like numbers. Our team is 55 or 60 people. Just one of the learnings for me has been how to grow the team. Like up to 50 people, it was quite easy and natural. Just build the culture and like mm-hmm. motivate people and do things with a passion. Now we are hiring like senior C-level management team next to the founders, mm-hmm. like people who can do the CFO stuff and head of growth and head of HR, head of product even. So mm-hmm. whoever wants to apply, please let me know. But like basically we're creating another structure which with the people who have more strategical thinking and like who can actually not only to work with the current customers and next customers and product development, but actually think further like 5 years, which is new for me. So it's not about the number of people, but it's about like what is the level of organization, and that's what.
Are you guys hiring them in Estonia or outside of Estonia,
doesn't,
probably?
Doesn't really matter. Like,
doesn't matter?
It has to be in somewhere in Europe, because like, yeah, our customers are in Europe, and like in heavily regulated markets, like our clients expect us to be.
Are you working fully remotely in general, in terms of the culture?
Mostly. Like, culture supports remote work, but it's like, yeah, people are actually, they want to come to office. Like, we are, age-wise, we are, as Estonian former president Kaljulaid said in one of the stages, that look at Salv, they're like middle-aged startup. Like, we still don't understand fully what it means, but like, we have a lot of kids and like families, and like, people take kids to the school in the morning, and if I come to town, I can work from cafeteria, but I enjoy actually working next to human beings. And then we have in Tallinn and Tartu the real offices, but yeah, some people are working random places actually as well. But yes, in terms of numbers, it's like more important the number of the employees or colleagues. It's actually about like what is the stage of the organization, mm-hmm, for me, mm-hmm, and now we're like in this conversion stage into the more sustainable organization than so far. Customers, yeah, we have clients from 14 different countries across, mostly from Europe, again UK, Switzerland, France, from Baltics. But yeah, Estonia is the market where we own the full banking sector, like all the banks are our customers, so that's pretty unique, but we want to get into the same stage with other markets as well. It takes time and effort. Revenue-wise, we are like, investment-wise, we're like between seed and A round, so like our revenue is somewhere, yeah, somewhere also between those two.
You guys raised 3 million in 2019,
yeah, that was the last funding round, but we raised a bit earlier as well, but it's, yeah, like in our case, like what I really love in this sector is that banks are super good customers. Like, once they convert, they seem to be forever with us. Like, churn is practically zero, which means, mm-hmm, that like, okay, some fintech customers have gone because they run out of money and they cannot raise funds, which is understandable, but because of the product or because of our service, the churn is zero again, which is like very, very different from the Skype experience or even Wise, yeah, experience, where the churn was like normally very, very high number and you had to calculate it in. So like revenue wise or ARR wise, or lifetime value wise, like we're struggling to measure the lifetime value of the customers, because like they have been 1 year and 2 years and 3 years and 4 years. Like, how do we know when do they leave? Or like the LTV is like pretty, business model wise, it's important thing to measure, but actually, or to understand, but actually we don't, our investors said that don't worry about this thing, because it can you can basically maximize it as much as you want to. So.
And then in terms of maybe some targets, milestones, what are you looking forward to in the next year, in 2023, for example? What are some targets you guys have?
Yeah, as I said, like to take a step back, I have time. So like one learning is, again, in terms of the organizational development, I think it was like 3-4 months ago when my, mm-hmm, team members started to ask from me, like, what is our strategy? What is our business strategy and growth strategy? And I had heard that word before, but I didn't have a clue what does it mean, actually. So I had to Google, and someone recommended to read a book, The Good Strategy and Bad Strategy. And then I learned, and I Googled further, like, what's a startup strategy? Like, because in Wise, again, we consciously, we didn't have any strategy. We had some value pillars, and like we had focus and mission and stuff, and people did whatever was relevant, but there was no strategy, actually. Mm-hmm. But in our organization, people felt that we're missing one, and so we defined one, wrote down in one pager. It was like a lot of cool work, and actually really, really helpful for me, actually, to understand where in the startups our resources are limited always, right? And like how to apply our strengths, or what are our core strengths under this limited resources constraint, that where we should apply to have the biggest impact. And we figured out that actually the same networks that I explained, or these collaborative grant finding networks, these are great opportunities, like in terms of growth itself, like it's a viral network growth, mm-hmm, no-brainer, that's a good thing. But also, once we are present in one country with the network, then we can do a lot of upsell and cross-sell to these network members. Because network creation itself builds trust and confidence in our target customers, which then makes it like way more easier, means faster, with higher conversion rate, to sell other products to them. And basically our like target for the next year is actually to establish more and more these kind of networks.
Do you have any like defined plans for some of the products that you want to upsell?
Yeah, we have like this like terminology was like sanction screening product, transaction monitoring, behavioral products, risk assessment products. We have these ready from the older times, and we can sell them already now. But now the direct sales is pretty expensive and slow, and it works, of course. Like it brings revenue and it costs, but it's not as profitability as we would like to.
Yeah.
So that's why we establish networks first and then sell the other products to the network members. So, like goals, target-wise, like we need to establish more networks, like in various regions, as I said, London, other Baltic countries, elsewhere in Europe. And then the second step is actually to sell with a lower cost of acquisition, to sell the networks, network members, our other products. And again, that's the beauty of strategy. I believe in this, like when we speak in 1 year's time, then I will have evidence if it actually works or not. But at least that's the focus we have taken for the next coming years.
Any new fundraising plans?
Yes, of course, always. Like, to put in the money here. So.
All right. Well, thanks, David. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
It was nice talking to you.
To stay in the loop, go to our website, getcc.com, or follow us at GetCC'd on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube.